When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking season 3, episode 7, titled Bring It Down. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought the ending, like, I cannot believe how many pulse pounding crazy endings this season's got.
Yeah, every episode.
And we haven't even got to the big disaster yet. Like, there's all these moving pieces of Ellen's presidency crumbling, Danny's personal life crumbling, whatever the hell's going on at Jimmy and his band of merry nutballs, the Elaida pressure cooker situation with Margot. Everything is in this weak, vulnerable position, and a remarkably few amount of shoes have dropped. And there's still so many problems, and there's so many disasters to be beset in this operation. I am beside myself waiting for next week's episode. I really loved it. What do you think?
I liked it. I think that there are some elements that I like more than others. I really like the human drama stuff. And the exciting bits, you know, the landslide, all that stuff, the drill stuff. I'm not so sure about the conspiracy theory stuff. It's not that it's unrealistic or bad. It's just that I don't know that I want to watch it at this particular moment in history.
The conspiracy guys are like Danny, just like gross.
They're my Danny. Yep.
It happens. I don't want to hear about it. Yeah.
Yep. It really is. But the end is definitely super exciting. So I can forgive a lot of conspiracy theory nut job stuff. It seems to me like they're setting up a scenario, you know, with this title, Bring It Down. It's like, are they bringing down public opinion here? Because like all of these things are going to converge to tarnish the American space program in a way that I'm not sure the public will be cool with, you know, like Ellen's sex scandal stuff and Larry's sex scandal stuff and these conspiracy theorists now. You know, if they're going to be putting out crazy information about the falsehoods and the tabloids, and you get actual poor administration choices, like, well, you know, having a Russian agent at the head of your organization is a bad look.
The director of NASA being a Russian stooge, not a conspiracy, also not great. not great, Bob.
And also, I don't know that Ed is making the right choices. Is Ed actually a good commander? I'm looking at everything Ed's doing, and he just kind of like shuffles the deck chairs here with the crew assignments and puts him in a, you know, not super important role, Danny, I'm talking about, but he should take him off duty altogether. Why is he still on duty? They've got 24 freaking astronauts up there.
I definitely think we're seeing the weakness of the test military, because like what has Ed ever been in command of? And like maybe he was, I don't know, did he lead a carrier wing group? And if he did, that means he had about 12 hot jock, can't be told they're wrong, fucking testosterone out the ears, fuck boys. That he had under his command, and that's like all he can do. Like I was the one, and still to a lot of extent, saying like, yeah, it's hard to say who's the best Mars mission commander. Is it going to be the test pilot who thinks cool under pressure and has all this experience? Is it going to be the more brainy academic, slow stayed Danielle? It seems pretty clear that Danielle was the better choice. In hindsight and all that kind of stuff, because I thought the same thing. Like, you know, I mean, but this is classic enabling behavior, you know, the fact that at every screw up, Ed's there to blow up Danny and tell him how much slack he's given him. And I'm not going to give you any more slack, except for now. I'm going to give you just a little bit more slack, but this is the last time, mister. Yeah, Ed just doesn't know any other way than and the way it worked, like he learns such a bad lesson from Gordo, because Gordo, yeah. We talked about this all last season on our, you know, premium OTC show, which you can listen to our thoughts on that if you shell out $5 a month at support.baldmove.com. Anyway, that approach, that like raw dogging your mental illness and trying to just cow it into submission by staying underneath in your pool for an hour and staying in the dark with a helmet in your closet, mm-hmm. that is an extremely low percentage play.
Yeah.
And it worked to the extent that it got Gordo killed heroically on the moon. And Ed thinks that's the golden path.
I feel like that experiment was prematurely concluded, right? Like,
exactly.
Leave Gordo up there for another couple months, another year, and see what happens. Because I don't
what happens
it lasts
when him and Tracy remember why they hate each other and why they split up, and can Gordo keep the nice guy act as he? I mean that's the thing, but like clearly Ed sees that as the fucking blueprint. Obviously, that is how you straighten out your buddy if he's delusional and seeing ants and like that's so it's tragic. It is,
It's
extremely believable for a guy like Ed to be doing this.
Yeah, and he's biased, and there's a lot of reasons why this is why he makes a poor decision here. But yeah, I the more I look at it, I'm like, has Ed actually ever done anything that has impressed me as a commander? I'm trying to remember. Like he botched a couple of landings, or he called off a couple landings. That's probably smart, but. I don't know. He didn't get the glory there. On Jamestown, I guess he did the best he could, but he was dealing with a guy who was going slowly crazy.
He took a Russian prisoner.
The one thing he did, he made all kinds of bad choices.
He defied orders and didn't destroy the Russians were provoking them on the moon when he was in blackout communication and he could have and by the rules of engagement he should have and he didn't, and because of that he avoided World War III.
Okay.
Which no one knows about.
That's pretty important.
Yeah.
So I'll give him that. I'll chalk that up as one tally mark for him. There's a lot against him though. I'm starting to think Ed is not actually as good of a commander as we want him to be. But we'll see.
So, yeah, I think I'll say that he's bad at outliers. And unfortunately, he's got some outliers he's dealing with on his mission. Yeah.
It feels like all he's had brought to him are outliers.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We'll see what the public opinion does by the end of this season, because everything's looking pretty bad right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that there was going to be like with 5 minutes to go in this episode, I thought the scandal is going to be that Kelly finds a petri dish of life right as they're cracking into the reservoir, and it's already too late. You know, Ed's officially colonized this aquifer, and there's nothing for it. I really underestimated the amount of environmental destruction that we're capable of in a short time on Mars.
Yeah. Yeah,
we get there within a week or two. We've done more geological restructuring of Mars than's happened in the last probably 200 million years.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah,
it's kind of our MO.
Yeah.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues, but then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, are we ready to get into the recap?
Yes, we are.
All right, we start off with the news announcing the joint mission between Helios and Russia, and a well will be dug, and the Americans will be excluded from any missions.
The NASA Americans.
Thing. Yeah, yeah. What? How shitty is this? I just keep remembering like all the things that America has done to put Russia on this planet, right? Like, gave them the engine design. I know that was at gunpoint, essentially, with Margo. But gave them the engines to get there. They fucked up and ran the engines too hot and basically killed themselves, and we saved their asses. And now here they are betraying us on another planet. That just, that really gets my goat.
Ah, Soviet Russia, why aren't you more grateful for all the things America has done for you? I mean, yeah, but like it would be expected. I'm trying to think what would happen if the shoe were if the lunar or the Martian boot were on the other foot. And there's nothing in this series that has made me think that America would, quote unquote, do the right thing just cause.
Like, oh, absolutely not.
America has
that
done the right
thing.
But no, yeah, you're right. You're right.
It's absolutely still shitty.
But yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. And I wonder. Yeah, what does this do for Martian or for Russian NASA cooperation going forward? The other thing is like, yeah, now, especially now that I think the aquifer is just done, maybe. I'm curious to see if like this water is still able to be tapped or if it just all vented out to space or what's the deal.
I kind of wonder why they drilled from the ridge.
Dude,
Aquifer just end at the fucking ridge? Is it like all contained inside that cliff? Like,
I mean, I don't know how high margeringy works when you're at a third Earth gravity and freezing conditions. Like, maybe there is what, but like, man, it seemed insane to start your drilling from a high on a ridge. Maybe there's other concerns, like you get good water pressure by bringing the water.
That was a question. Pump it back down. Yeah.
That was a question I had. It's like, well, if there's water up on the ridge, it stands to reason there's water at the bottom of the ridge and probably a lot closer to the surface. Mm-hmm. Why are we drilling 700 meters down to get to it if that's not the case? I have a big question on that. It's one of the things that was glared so much that I feel like there's probably a satisfying scientific answer to it.
Right. Because otherwise it's just asinine, right?
Right. But the cable stitch in the first episode, I thought was pretty asinine, too. And I know other people suggested that maybe it wasn't so asinine. I still haven't gone out and done my backyard garden hose experiment. and I don't even know how I would. I don't know how you'd bust this myth, but yeah.
Yeah, well, when you got to come up with a action-packed cliffhanger every single episode, you need to come up with some asinine plans every once in a while.
Every once in a while.
All right, let's go over to Sergei being sent back to Moscow now that the Russians don't need Margot's cooperation anymore. And he says goodbye to Margot and leaves. And it's very tearful. It's less tearful before he leaves, but once he leaves, boy, Margot just breaks down.
Yeah, like I thought it was interesting how every time Sergei stepped towards her, she took a half step back. And I think it's to protect herself and to keep her from feeling these emotions in his presence. But I did wonder why. What purpose does, at this point, does the repression serve for them both? When she just going to scream, cry. I mean, at the end where she's just got that pillow and she's just scream crying into it.
I don't know. There's so much left unsaid and undone in that relationship. It's if there wasn't the whole blackmail situation, it would be sad. It's still a little bit sad, but
it is very sad. It's very sad when, you know, things get in the way of people and cause people to betray each other. And,
and in a different world, they could have been probably happy together.
Yeah. But also kind of fuck Margot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she's not been super sympathetic to this point. And the way she treats Aleda in a very heavy-handed manner to kind of protect her own secrets and shit-titude is gross. But yeah, as a human in that moment, I felt for her.
Let's take the scene over to Larry being grilled by some sort of committee during a hearing about his connections to government contractors. And then it turns personal when they ask him if he's having a secret affair with a White House aide. He says no, of course. And afterward, he goes to the guy he's sleeping with, whose name I don't even know. Asks him who he told. He says that it's an old college friend. And Larry says, call this guy and say that you lied about the affair. And I don't care what it takes. If you have to check yourself into rehab, tell him you're on drugs, do it.
Yeah, they mentioned this guy's name, something Zilke. I think it's Jeremy Zilke, which I was like, that sounds like a real person. Right. I was wondering if it was like, if this was some kind of minor, but like, yeah, that would, why would you blow up somebody and say, you know, unless they're very out and proud and been like, yeah, if there was a first gentleman in the office, I'd fuck him. Why would you blow up? So apparently this person's invented.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting because Larry is like working this subcommittee over pretty good. You know, he's got all the answers. You know, he's not afraid of the corruption probe, and they blindside him with this personal stuff. I don't understand why you have to lie to Congress. Why can't you just be like, this has nothing to do with my contracts at NASA, and this is gross and a personal, and I'm not going to dignify it with a response. Like, you're allowed to plead the fifth. Like, that's a grandiose pearl clutching way of doing it, but I don't know. It felt like he was blindsided, but I guess that's why that happens when you think you've got everybody fooled.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. Is a non-answer in the public's eye more of an answer than denying it? I can see like,
but it's not this. Oh, this was a closed hearing
take the fifth
though.
On anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I guess they
right.
would just drag.
That's and the thing. I have no context. The show doesn't give you any context for what's happening here. It just lets you. It assumes that you're going to have a lot of knowledge about how these committees work and what process is going on here. I don't know that I have quite enough information to fill in all the gaps.
Yeah, I was about to say this feels very much like something made for boomers and Gen Xers, because the background information is Ken Starr, the special prosecutor that brought Bill Clinton to his knees. Har har over the blowjob, was empowered to investigate the Clintons' involvement in a savings and loan scandal in the 80s. And we went from there to blowjobs in the Oral Office. So like it is a literal one-to-one metaphor here, which a lot of people, you know, I've been picking up on. But it still is like I still think it's kind of crazy how it happens that way. It's like in no other law enforcement or investigating capacity can you like, hey, I'm here to investigate your drug, you know, the fact you got drugs on your property. And then, well, I don't know if that's true. I guess if someone were to kick in your door looking for drugs and found child porn instead, it's not like you'd get off scot-free, I don't think.
Probably not.
But it's a wild leap from you might be embezzling funds to you are diddling somebody in the Oval Office. But it happened in real life, so what are you going to do?
Which isn't a crime, right? Like that's the thing. It's not illegal for him to be doing what he's doing. It's just a bad look according to the public. So
yeah, and I when I was watching this stuff, it made me wonder, like, was something like this inevitable? Because we never really had there was a whole bunch of moral scandals. We talked about Gary Hart that almost derailed his presidency. Well, it did derail his presidential offer running. We've got it with the Bill Clinton. There's like this brief window in history because like before then, like the press knew that JFK was nailing everything that wasn't nailed down. And, you know, they were complicit in hiding a health scandal for that Roosevelt was going through from the public. Like there was an understanding that like, OK, some things were bigger than the man and bigger than and we kind of. But like there was this moment where the press decided to stop doing that and that people were still capable of being shocked because they didn't know how things were actually operating. So it's like somebody would almost certainly use this or an attack like this on somebody. So it's like, I imagine people like, isn't it awful convenient that you essentially have an opposite equal Bill Clinton situation? But like, I don't know, maybe it was inevitable just because of how the culture was primed.
Just the changing times. Yeah, could be. All right, let's go over to Jimmy hanging out with his friends in, I guess, the backyard. I don't know what the living arrangement is here. This is very confusing. So Jimmy is hanging out in the backyard of what I think is his parents' old house. And his brother's wife is there with the baby.
I don't think it's his parent because like Danny broke into that and skinny dipped and he was arrested. I don't think Jimmy would arrest him.
This is not the same pool. I'm very confused because I thought this was the same pool, but maybe the other one
it's
was
Florida.
Around.
A lot of people have pools like this in their backyard, I think, is what you're supposed to understand. But I thought that I was confused the same way. The only reason I didn't leap on that is because I'm like, well, there's no way Jimmy would have fucking arrested him. And it does. They have implied that he's moved into Danny's house. So and staying with Danny's wife while Danny's on mission, at least
Sure. So he's been hanging out with his friends in the backyard all the time. They hate President Ellen. I don't know if they hate her for her covering up of the truth, goddammit, or if they hate her for being gay or what. I don't know how much he's told them. I don't know how much he knows. But they ask if he's ready for their secret mission. And apparently Sonny is going with him.
Ugh. Yeah. They also have Danny's wife show up and she gets a frosty reception. Mm-hmm. And apparently her own backyard. So they set that up for, and something that doesn't really pay off.
No.
I'm curious to see where they're going with like, the fact that like, hey, Danny's wife is here. She's in the middle of this. She's trying to tell Danny there's something wrong. But clearly there's, you know, like what is that going to have to do with the overall plot of Jimmy right now?
Yeah. I don't know. And I feel bad for her. She's stuck in this situation, right? She can't really tell Jimmy to leave.
Dude, I feel so bad for Danny's, Mrs. Stevens.
Right? She's just in the middle of a shitstorm.
Yeah.
But she's only beginning to see the tip of that iceberg.
Yeah, she's trying to be that 1960s astronaut housewife in a world that role has no longer available for anyone. And she's going to be caught in this huge scandal. And I don't know. I truly the victim of this whole situation.
Danny is up on Mars continuing to be crazy, taking pills. It's just a real quick scene there. We'll get to more of that inevitably in this episode. And the Russian commander announced that water does not contain life and they're ready to bring the drill down. Danny's tuned out, but apparently he's going on the co-pilot mission with Ed. And they begin prep. I liked that they named this ridge, especially after I found out, because I was kind of pissed when I saw they named it Gagarin Ridge.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it. The Russians got to stake their name on the first location of water on Mars. And I'm like, that sucks because they did nothing to help get us there. But then by the end of the episode, I'm like, okay. Let's call this place Gagarin Ridge. Yeah. The site of the first potentially lethal human interaction. Yeah.
I can't believe this is the same human being that like 2 weeks ago was like, why does anyone care about first anything? And it's like, God damn that Gagarin getting a Martian promontory named after him. Well, that son of a bitch.
Our asses.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the fact that they're ungrateful. They're ungrateful and they don't respect their betters. I get it.
I mean, not saying we're better. I'm just saying we did things right. They didn't, and they're reaping the rewards. It's not cool.
But he's not saying we're better. Whatever he's doing, it's not that.
What the fuck does get ready to Jack and Jill mean? Is this a sex metaphor? Are they penetrating the planet? Is that what's happening here?
Aren't the rough, like, this is like some Armageddon shit. Yes. And turns out Bruce Willis was fucking right.
Uh-huh.
You can't send astronauts. So you gotta send some refnucks up there or the whole thing goes pear-shaped. Yeah. So I huge mea culpa. Get Ben Affleck on. He needs to apologize to Bruce Willis. He needs to apologize to Michael. What is it? Michael Mann, Michael Bay. Yeah. Apologies all around.
They need to start stocking the NASA snack bar with animal crackers.
They do.
He was absolutely right.
They do. What was the actual question? I grandstanded on Michael Bay too long.
What the hell does get ready to Jack and Jill mean?
Oh, so isn't there a position on like a well drilling team that's called a jack? And this is like an oblique reference to like we've got women in the team and it's Jacks and Jills.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought there was something.
I have no idea.
You got like rough necks and you got like well jacks and you got like the Queen of Hearts.
You got the
pump boys. Yeah, there's all kinds of positions and terminology. I thought, but I have no idea.
There is nothing I know less about on this planet than drilling.
Or is he talking about the Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch
a pail of water?
A pail of water. It's a well metaphor. We got there. We figured it out. They're going up the hill.
We put our minds together. But yeah, you got, I mean, that maybe that's why they're listening to nursery rhymes and they assume you have to get to higher ground to drill for water.
Why, Jack and Jill, why you put your well on a hill?
Right?
Don't you know? Stupid. Don't put you know how water tables work? Yeah, idiots. Jeez.
Yeah. All right. And apparently the name is Big Ass Drill for this thing.
I love that.
The bad.
It's bad.
Mm-hmm. Turns out to be very bad.
It was. It did a number on Gagarin here.
Yeah. The Americans over in their habs eat in tense silence. And then Kelly talks with her main squeeze Peloton about Ed and finds out that they're about to begin drilling despite the fact that she hasn't even finished her water test. She is shocked.
And pissed. She's going to moosh her father.
Shocked and pissed. Yeah. We'll get to that later.
Gonna fucking moosh him.
Yeah, they kind of put the American tensions on the back burner here, which is fine. We have a lot going on, so.
I did like the scene of the NASA astronauts is eating in complete deject silence. You know, they had like there's such a contrast between the feast, which was just Ed, cover for Ed sliding the knife in now and. That's the other thing, man. Ed doesn't like to deal with the consequences of his own actions, does he?
Yeah. I mean, he likes to brush everything under the rug, pretend everything is okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He likes to be the big gregarious guy, and he doesn't like to be around when the pieces fall.
Yeah. All right. Then we go to Aleda, and she takes the information that she has on how the Russians got their engine designed to her now ex-husband, I believe, who wants to think on it for a while, or they might just be separated temporarily. I don't know. It seems like they've gone through some shit.
Does seem there's some estrangement here. They are living separately. Yeah. They have a shared custody of their son.
They haven't seen each other in a while, probably, or at least talked seriously.
Why do you think that?
The questions about her dad, like how he's doing.
Huh.
If they had seen each other last week, I doubt he'd be asking so seriously about him.
I was also wondering what his I want to talk about that, but also what are his qualifications to help Elaida out in her her counter spy mission?
No idea.
Did they establish that he worked at the FBI or something?
Or I don't know.
It would make some sense, but I also thought I kind of got the opinion he was a Mr. Mom type, that, you know, Elaida was the breadwinner and he might have, you know, that he was kind of like with the child. I wonder if. Is Elaida the one that doesn't have primary custody? I feel like she's the one that might have weekends and every other or one night a week, as busy as she is, you know?
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not a lot of context.
Tons of questions.
Here.
Tons of questions about the relationship and what's going on with her. But
yeah, they're split up somehow. They chat for a while, and before he leaves, he throws out the idea that maybe it was one of her superiors who leaked the design, not one of her underlings. And that gets her thinking.
I did wonder what more, because Alzheimer's is weirdly emphasized in this episode. There is the lady at NASA reading the magazine about, I guess it's come out that Ronald Reagan has suffered from Alzheimer's in this timeline now. And they mentioned about her father progressing. To what end, though?
I mean, I'm assuming they're just building that into a problem for her.
It's already a problem for her, I would think.
I mean, yeah, it's a day-to-day problem, but yeah. I don't know, some crescendo.
It's weird that they're underlying and scenes have nothing to do with her. Like, is there going to be some surprise cure? But to what end? Like, the fact that they cured Alzheimer's and it seems like it's a beginning of season four kind of thing, like, you know, the montage of everything that's happened, like, yeah, they have a cure for I wonder if they're setting up something, but like, man, that's a lot of setup for essentially what is a season opening gag at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that they were going to have maybe that what's going to, as I was watching this episode the first time, I was thinking, oh, I wonder if what's going to finally get her to penetrate like the halo that Margot has and start considering her as a spy is her father's kind of like paranoid delusion. Like he might like start ranting about that situation and it gives her kind of like, well, her dad's not in her right mind, but it makes her think for the first time, maybe there should be some, but she gets there without it. So it's like, man, I just don't know what kind of this Alzheimer's underpinning that they're getting at.
You think Margot's going to try and play that card on her? Like when she comes to Margot and says, "You're the spy," she's gonna be like, "You are paranoid. You're just like your father."
I thought you were gonna say she's gonna claim early onset dementia.
No.
I was just walking to my office and I got confused which papers I was handing to the Russians. I thought it was your rocket.
Oh, okay. That wouldn't work.
Okay. I thought that would be a wild turn of events. Okay. What are you suggesting now?
I'm suggesting that she turn it around on Elaida and say, like, you have inherited some of your father's mental issues and this is it.
Well, starting to manifest in you. Yeah. Cause like she did have some kind of oppositional defiant disorder going in the first season or two. And I thought maybe they were going to go that way. That would be vicious. Like I thought what Margot did in this episode is already pretty fucking vicious, but holy hell.
Yeah. I don't know how far Margot's willing to go. All the way. She'll probably burn everybody to keep her secret. I imagine.
Except for fucking Sergei.
Yeah.
Who she will not be able to save. No matter what, I don't think.
And you probably have to think that Elaida's considered it, right? That she is going to have to deal with this issue at some point in her life. I think it's a lot easier to make someone with a family history of mental disorders think that they are experiencing the same issues.
Oh, yeah. It's probably why it's a giant asshole move. But yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that.
Huge asshole move, but... It's Margot. She's kind of full of asshole moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, turns out.
All right. Ellen gives Larry the business over sleeping with their aide, and he accidentally lets it slip that Pam left so that she wouldn't get in Ellen's way, not because she loves someone else, and Ellen feels very betrayed.
Yeah, it is funny that even with a woman in the White House, it's the man that causes a sex scandal. You know, it's like, goddamn, something about that testosterone.
Yeah, I feel bad for Larry in this scene, though. Like, you know, he's tired of living someone else's life, and I get that. Makes sense.
It's
like
one
a
thing,
permanent quantum leap for him. You know, he's teleported into the body of someone who is straight, and he has to act that way to get out of it, but he's never going to get out of it.
Yeah, it's not like Bill Clinton where it's like, well, you just have to, you know, excuse yourself from buffet. You can still partake. It's like you just can't eat food. Just can't eat food. Any food that's going to satisfy you anyway.
Right. And they got this definitely with Will last episode, a little bit, you know, of the stress and inherent unfairness of having to hide who you actually are. Not living a life. You're living, like I said, someone else's life. It's got to suck.
And you can have other enjoyable parts to it. Like, you know, you can have children and friends and accomplishments, but it feels like a half life for sure.
Yeah. And when he just says, you know, he likes me, there's something very like human about that response. It's like, I found somebody who liked me and it felt good. And I made a mistake. Like, I get it, Larry.
I get it, too.
But at the same time, I understand why Ellen's pissed about this. Because, God.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like such a small thing. You know, in the moment, right? In the aggregate, it's a huge thing. Because he's not living his actual life. But in the moment, it's such a small fucking thing. Somebody liked me. So I potentially blew up our entire career and lives.
Right. And massive geopolitical consequences and stakes too.
Yeah.
And like the only thing worse than like making all these sacrifices is making all these sacrifices and then the souffle collapses at the last moment because XXX. So, you know, and again, that's an unfair situation, but from Ellen's perspective, it's gotta be hard not to go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about this, stuff with Ellen and Pam where she finds out that, you know, Pam left for reasons
they're going with that. Like, I hope Pam has moved on and found someone that she loves as much as Ellen, but on the other hand, that's hard to do in the 90s, you know. So
yeah, I feel like Ellen's making a huge mistake in this episode by going to her. Like, she's
why?
Just said like it's just a bad time. It is a very bad time for this. Like, people, you know, aren't automatically, I guess, going to assume that, oh, Ellen went to visit some woman. They must be sleeping together, must be past flames. But it's not a great time to do this. And after she's just given Larry the business for this indiscretion, I feel like this is a mistake on her part.
I think that's exactly, it's like, this has given her the moral license to do something this kind of rash and impetuous,
you risky. Know,
like what, you know, like Larry'd be the one to fly off the handle, but what's he going to say to me now?
Right.
But yeah, I do wonder, like, to what end, like, what is Ellen just going to be like, you know what, I'm resigning and I'm going to live with Pam in perpetitude, you know? Is she gonna make Pam tell her the truth that I left because I knew this is who you are and wanted to be more than you want? Like, and what does Ellen do with that?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's gonna be a very fruitful conversation given their life situations, but I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
But that's the thing about people. They do stupid things that don't make sense and are risky and dangerous.
Like Jimmy, for instance, taking Sonny to NASA, where he's greeted with a hug by the receptionist and they go on a tour. This is going to become a thing this episode.
Yeah.
This Sonny girl is so close to getting it. She's so close to getting it. She looks at the statue. Why would they build a statue for a thing that didn't even happen just to perpetuate this lie? Like, you're so close. Just think about it for another 2 seconds and you're there.
But that's the thing, is that they would, though. Like, they would. If this
if
this
it was
statue,
truly a cover up, sure.
Yeah, no, they would have no problems, you know, creating shell companies and killing people and doing whatever it takes. The intimidating journalists, they'd have no problems doing whatever it takes to cover it up. So it's like, I am frustrated, beyond frustrated, at the present kind of fact-free environment that we live in, or fact-optional environment we live in. But the U.S. government is very much the boy who cried wolf. And on a truly both sides trademarked situation that, you know, the left has their laundry list of bullshit that is intolerable, and the right does too. And it's just a target rich environment. I don't know how you get the faith and trust back in institutions, but step one would be for them to stop lying and be more transparent. But I don't know. But it is galling. I will say it's galling, as, you know, since we're all people to watch the show, veterans of the Jamestown crisis, and seeing that heroism and real time, seeing these people who don't fucking know so confidently and smugly asserting contra factuals is extremely frustrating and angering as a viewer. At least it does me. It upsets me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the number one reason I strongly dislike this storyline. As much as you dislike the Danny stuff, this is my Danny. they could stop lying right here at the reception desk. There is no world in which Jimmy looks like Gordo. I'm sorry. This receptionist is lying to him.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's... maybe there's something in the eyes or there, or maybe I think you're right. The reception's being kind to him, and that is so hard for Danny. It's because these are all of his parents, friends and family and coworkers, and he's going to do a secret mission against them. And you can tell it bothers him. It feels like treachery.
I'm excited to get into like the NASA, the astronaut meeting room, because that's where things really kick off with this. But we'll
get there.
Danny's wife calls to let him know that Jimmy is getting in with the wrong crowd back on Earth, and Danny just loses all touch with reality here. He's phasing in and out of consciousness, basically, just as Ed walks in on him, and Ed notices something is wrong but doesn't really say anything. And then Danny
He didn't see the pupils on this kid. This kid's pupils are the size of dinner plates, man.
Yeah. No, we're supposed to know by the end of this episode or here in a few scenes that he does notice all that. It's just like we said earlier, he's making the bad decision to give him the benefit of the doubt and put too much Gordo on him, I guess.
Yeah.
So Danny goes over to another hab to grab gear for their mission. And while there, he has a hard time dealing with the animal shenanigans going on. I don't know. I'm starting to get a little bit of sympathy for Danny here. This dog barking is fucking annoying.
Oh, no.
Like, you're in an enclosed space with a bunch of people, and every 5 seconds, this dog is just going to yap.
The amount of hate mail you're going to get for wanting this electronic puppy to die, and the amount that I'm gonna have to wade through. I send it. You know what? Send it to Jim at baldmove.com, not FAM at bald. I'm not supporting. Not supporting the cyber puppy crime. I think that's part of having a puppy on base. You know.
Danny didn't ask for this puppy. No one asked for a puppy. Get the fucking puppy into the airlock if you wanted it on the base.
No one asked for Danny be popping goofballs, you know, like Tic Tacs either.
It's true.
And that's the real. Everyone else on base loves it. You know,
tolerate. I feel like they tolerate it. Nick, with his overactive imagination, is anthropomorphizing this dog, this toy dog. It's too much.
You know what? I just looked it up. There is 55.91 million square miles on Mars that don't have a fucking dog barking on it. Danny can go there. There is like 10 square feet that the dog can occupy. And everyone, it's delighting everyone. Even the hard-ass Cuban cosmonaut is warming up to this dog. No, PJ, I'm standing PJ.
Delighted? I saw no delight. I saw tolerance. I saw resigned acceptance.
That was the beginning of a Nick's invasion of Havana. Yeah, no, it was going places.
I saw a crew that said, "Well, if we airlock this dog, we'll have to airlock Nick too, and we can't do it."
All right. All right. Again, Jim at baldmove.com is where you want to send all those scorching hot takes. Bypass the fam mailbox with that. Miss me with that.
If you had a noise machine sitting on your desk that just made barking sounds every 5 seconds in your cubicle at work, and I came over and I asked you, like, get this thing away from me, turn it off, and you refused, I would be well within my rights to stomp it. He stomped a noise machine to death is all he did. Not a dog, not a pet, a noise machine.
Jim at baldmove.com
to a
is the man speaking
a
right now.
Board that is programmed to annoy people. That is when
all
he
right.
stomped.
All right. All right. What would the host in Westworld say?
Fair. All right. Let's move on here. Kelly tells Ed that she can't rule out life in the water on Mars. And he tries to sell her on the big picture, but she is not hearing it. She just hears manifest destiny.
Well, especially since, like, this is Ed not taking his daughter seriously. Like, she's like, you know, Dad, I'm a specialist, and these techniques are not, like, currently accepted, and the stands are evolving. And he's like, well, come on, Kel, it's your special shit. The NASA, like, he is denigrating the pioneering work that she's doing on extraterrestrial life, right? Like, I think that's why it stings even more.
I mean, maybe I'm just full of controversial opinions this week, but I'm kind of on Ed's side with this. I think maybe, yes, he could have phrased it a little bit better. But look, if you have a consensus among scientists as to what tests we need to do to establish whether or not there's life in this water, and you do those tests and they come back negative, I think you're well within your rights. If not your rights, but you're well within what I would consider acceptable behavior, just going ahead and drilling. Like, the science is always evolving. That's the thing. The science will always evolve. We could say, look, 100 years from now, we'll have better tests. 10 years from now, we'll have better tests. Let's wait. Well, how long do you wait before you say, well, this is the best that science can do right now? It will have to be acceptable.
So that brings up a good point. I wish they'd actually mention, and like Kelly had said, like, if you give me 16 more hours, I'll have all of the, like, spectral gas astronomy done, and like to see, like, to gauge how big of an asshole Ed is. Because I guess you're right. If it was on the order of weeks, months, certainly years, that seems ridiculous. But if she's got a more sophisticated lab and special technology, like, finding life on Mars would be big. There's shit tons of water on Mars, I guarantee fucking tea. You'll find it eventually. But life on Mars, like, that's probably even bigger. That's the single most amazing. I think even Dev would think so. Futurist Dev would be like,
especially if life has a wallet. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, this isn't just some person saying, I got some science. It's his daughter that's been studying this specifically for this mission for years and years. And for him to be like, well, your methods aren't widely accepted, Kel. I just thought that was an extra knife in the gut, you know. And he knew it because he ducked this conversation, as Alexi, as you put, Peloton alluded to earlier in this episode.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, there's enough blame to go around here. I think Ed might be jumping prematurely into drilling, but also Kelly wants to wait forever, it seems. She might.
Well, I don't know.
Is she also not bitter about the Russians being the ones to go on this mission with him? I wonder if there's a little bit of anger.
There's a lot of motives. A lot of motives in the air. But I do wish we knew how long she was asking, because I doubt it was like forever.
Right.
It was probably at most another couple days or weeks. But I don't know. So, but she really, she hits him hard with that manifest destiny punch to the liver. And then she hit him with the, you want to be first? You're going to be first to kill life on another planet to the kidneys. So he got pretty beat up in his conversation.
Actually, Danny, it looks like, is the first to kill life on another planet. Based on the end of this episode.
Yeah.
We'll see. All right. Speaking of Danny, we go back to him. The noise machine, the speaker hooked up to an annoyance device, is barking at him. So he decides to stomp it to death, to the horror
to
of
which
the others.
The entire Hab says, what the fuck is wrong with you? Jim at baldmove.com.
Here's what I love about this scene. The menacing close-ups of the dog as it comes closer and closer to him.
Right.
I love those shots. They're so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Danny is not operating at peak efficiency.
No, God, no. All right, then we go over to Jimmy giving Sonny the tour of the boring parts of NASA, which are just the hallways. Like, this Severance-esque thing that's going on here in the NASA building is horrible. Uh-huh. God, how do you ever get anything done in that environment? You gotta walk two miles to get to your coworker's office.
Yeah, what are the different labs? This is optics and design.
Right.
And no real astronaut stuff going on here. And the sexy... But the thing is all they needed is a key card. So...
Yes.
Sonny
goes into this astronaut meeting room where the key cards might be. Al Rossi comes over to chat with Jimmy for a bit, invites him to look at the memory board of his mom, and it affects him emotionally, but not so much that he doesn't have time to steal his badge.
Commander Rossi, you'll recall, was the moon base commander at the time of the Jamestown meltdown. He looks a lot different. They've really aged him up in a way they haven't really some of the other leads. But I recognized him, and I thought this might be where Jimmy gets cold feet and, you know, kind of punks out, because here's these people that clearly love and respect his mom. Does he really think they're into this conspiracy? This is a man with firsthand fucking knowledge. But on the other hand, Rossi couldn't give him a full accounting, because that would include the fact that there was a black nuclear reactor running that was off the books because they're trying to weaponize them. So, like, it's one of those things where, if things were different, they'd be different, but they're not.
I find, you know, what Sunny is doing in these scenes particularly gross, right? She could have grabbed his badge.
She's using him. Yeah.
She is intentionally trying to corrupt him, get him to do the things that are wrong, to have leverage over him, both.
Oh, you thought that? I thought it was just
maybe
that
legally
she,
and also emotionally.
That Jimmy couldn't distract an astronaut while he swiped, whereas she is able to do. She's a lot good at that. But I don't want to, like, there's nothing genuine about the relationship. She recruited him because he is an awkward loser and she is a manic pixie conspiracy girl. And he is, like, all about that. And he's completely Twitter-pated with her. But she's using him. Like, the big thing is like, I think they hinted that he doesn't even have her phone number.
Oh, maybe not her real number.
Yeah, that she gave him like a fake number at a bar because, like, oh, I don't want Jimmy to have my real phone number. It's gross from that perspective. You might be right about your surmisal. I just wasn't sure.
Yeah,
I thought she's just the better, the better hijinks person.
Gotcha. All right. I like that scene where he's looking at his mother's pictures from the first female graduating class of astronauts. That was
reading
cool.
the letter that kind of changed Trace's life.
Yeah. It's a nice moment for us also to remember Tracy, which I really liked. All right. Ellen gets bad news that another person can no longer support her jobs, Bill. This might be the same guy from before. I can't remember, and I don't know his voice. Anyway, Larry tells the VP that all the stories about him are lies, and they tell... who is this guy who's with the VP? I don't even
this is
know.
Carl fucking Rove.
No.
The architect of the Bush Dirty Tricks campaign in 2000. The man that implied in South Carolina that John McCain's adopted Bangladeshi daughter was his illegitimate black child, that he fathered with a black woman, because of course he would. This guy is fucking scum, and he's talking about Lee fucking Atwater, which is like even worse. Yeah, like Google all these people's names if you didn't live through it. This was a rich fucking scene for someone that lived through the 90s and 2000s with their eyeballs open. Oh my God.
How do you know it's him? Because I don't think they ever even bother mentioning a first name, let alone Rove.
He looks just like him. So you're right. He might not, but I just from how he talked and how in the way he looked, I was assuming that it is Carl Rove.
Following politics then. So
He's the Republican. He's the Republican dirty tricks guy. So like, and it was of the era. So I'm assuming that's what they're hinting at. He's going to make his bones on this.
Yeah, they're apparently going to blackmail Willie Barron, who is the head of this investigative committee, digging into Larry's stuff. Yeah, and he's warning them, like, the media is going to tear into this, right? And he says the best defense is your beautiful marriage, essentially.
Yeah. I also want to say, like, this gives you an idea how shitty Karl Rove is when he was confronted with these lies he was spreading about John McCain in South Carolina. I used to be a conservative. I was a bit of a McCainiac, so this is especially egregious for me. He says, well, I thought John McCain would seize on this opportunity for what it was, which is an enormous opportunity to give insight into who he and his wife are, because Sidney McCain adopted a child from an orphanage in Bangladesh. And this story is an incredible tale of love and compassion. But rather than doing that, John McCain has decided to play the victim and point the finger at Bush when he has no evidence whatsoever. And it's just, what a chode. What a fucking chode.
Okay. Yeah. I guess let's go over to Ellen deciding to make an unexpected detour from her schedule. Mm-hmm. We also hear on the radio that everybody's worried about more American companies making deals with Russia. Yeah. Yeah. That's capitalism for you. Literally the only loyalty a company has is to profits. That's it.
Yeah. Legally speaking. I thought it's because she talks about she wants to divert to Andrews Air Force Base. I thought she was going to do one of those things like Ed and Molly and go flying.
Oh,
I'm
boy.
Like, how is the Secret Service going to clear this? Are they going to let there's no fucking way, right? I was blindsided by the Pam approach.
Yeah, she's just getting on a jet to go. I don't know where Pam's living. Do you know?
Somewhere that you can fly Air Force One to. So it could literally be anywhere.
Yeah. All right. Ed puts Danny off the mission and on notice because he's on drugs. And Danny gets lippy with him. Ed invites him to take a swing, and he doesn't. Instead, he goes to his quarters and hits himself. I felt like this was a terrible idea from the beginning when Ed puts Nick and Danny together. Because I thought Nick was going to get the punch that was meant for Ed based on their interactions previously.
Yeah.
With, you know, Nick having the overactive imagination, the barking noise machine, and doing all these movie lines from the movie about his parents. It felt like that was creating a perfect storm there, but they really subvert that.
Yeah, I was not sure where they're going, because I'm like, man, striking a superior officer in this kind of, like, you know, extreme, almost like combat type situation where you're working with a foreign. Yeah, I was like, oh man, you're not coming back from that.
No.
And Danny had enough wherewithal to realize all that stuff. Although I guess this isn't really, this is a private company. I don't know what would happen if you just punch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like a Fort Leavenworth situation. It's not a court martialing
like
situation. Yeah, it would be. Which is still not good, but
I love the way Ed stands there. You know, he invites him to take a swing. He's got his hands behind his back. You know, he's clearly not afraid of this punch that's incoming.
Why would he be? Danny's tiny compared to him. I get it that he's got like 30 years on him, but
yeah, he's younger, but he's probably more spry. But you're right, he's tiny, and he's also just whacked out of his mind. Like,
yeah, oh yeah,
this is the equivalent of fighting a drunk person, right?
And after the hate crime he committed on this poor digital being, I think the whole hab would jump in. It would just be,
dogpile him.
It would be a dogpile, exactly.
Maybe get a few stomps in.
But yeah, I just like the whole time, like Danny, like he is grossly insubordinate. And like every time Ed thinks he's got a lid clamped on it, he turns around and Danny does something else, goes back for seconds of, you know, okay, sir.
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be
violence. Why he doesn't just take him off duty altogether? I don't get it. Just postpone this mission for like 2 hours or whatever it takes to get him up to orbit and another astronaut down to the base.
I mean, this is everything that Margo is worried about. The fact that Ed is going to essentially have a man off, you know. Yeah. getting everybody's face and shit. And then that's his idea of like, okay, you back this guy down. And now to prove, I think even putting him with Nick is proving a point. Like, oh, you got a problem with this guy? I'm going to make him your commanding officer. So you have to do what he does. Like, it's like I said, this is all Ed's theory of command, and it's just not working in this situation.
Right. He definitely doesn't have all the information either, so it's hard to fault him too much, but it's just, he's making, yeah, risky calls.
Yeah.
All right. Leda tells Margo that Emma gave the engine design to the Russians, who is apparently a secretary. She has pulled her credit report, which she thinks is a motive, and Margo shuts that down and suggests that Leda stop pursuing this or she'll be fired. And Leda leaves her office and then realizes, oh, it actually must have been Margo all along.
Wow. I mean, she doesn't, the gaslighting, that word thrown around a lot, but using the hysteria over your father's fake espionage, if you recall, that's what got him deported the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, the accusations of a spy in NASA.
Yeah.
To like drag all that stuff just to cover your own ass. And I guess to be fair, it's Sergei and his family's, but it's pretty gross. It's pretty gross what she's doing here. And
I don't even think we've seen the grossest of it. I think she's going to go darker.
How low, where do you think the nadir is going to be?
I mean, I don't think she would do physical harm to Aleda to keep this secret, but reputational harm, absolutely. I think she's going to cast out on Aleda.
Hmm.
Either her mental state or her qualifications or her data, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gaslight has only begun.
They name checked Aldrich Ames here. They mentioned that this latest secretary has got double the debt. I guess that was the way the KGB got to Ames, is that he was in debt. And they offered to pay off him, but he I guess he's like the most decorated Soviet spy in all history. And I guess until this Robert Hansen, which I'm not as familiar with, but, yeah, this was a real life reference that, he was convicted in 1994. So it'd be something that, was fresh in Aleda's mind.
Yeah.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on a series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, let's move over to Jimmy calling Sonny and leaving a message saying he wants to get put the badge back. And then he gets a call immediately back from a dude who invites him outside, and they present him with the stolen statue of his parents. And he's pretty excited about it.
Yeah, he's afraid. Like, at first I thought he was shitting his pants, like in I don't know. Like, I guess this. What did they think they? That's the other thing. Is like, what did they think they accomplished? Like when they said that they had gone to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and done some mischief, the last thing I would have thought is that they stole the statue.
Yeah, this scene is making it seem like these people are mostly harmless. I think that's to lull us into a false sense of security here. Mm. We know that's not true, right? I mean, societally, conspiracy theory stuff is ruining shit. But also, I think these people are just warming up. I think this is still the indoctrination phase for Jimmy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're doing it very intentionally. Very.
Did you notice that when he got the call back from Charles that the caller ID said Sonny? So that's what made me think that, Sonny's not even giving her his real her real phone number.
Yeah, I think you could be right about that. Talking about like some of the tech stuff that they're doing here, I couldn't help but notice. I think he's talking on a Motorola StarTAC phone, which was like the phone to have before the Motorola Razr, right? Like Motorola was defining phone design in that era. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And the StarTAC was like, I remember a friend having the StarTAC and being like, that is a cool fucking phone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny, the aesthetics, how much have changed.
Oh, dude, yeah, this plasticky piece of, like, massive hunk of plastic is just cool.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, before the Razr, and now the Razr looks kind of silly. I still think the Razr looks pretty cool.
I think the Razr looks cool. But, like, in fact, you could argue if they could ever get a touchscreen to have that kind of form factor, it would fold and flip that well. It would, because, like, man, I'm kind of over how big phones have gotten and how heavy they are. I got this Pixel 6, huge piece, XL, huge piece of shit. Hate it. It's the first phone in 20 years I've owned where I'm like, this seems like a downgrade. Yeah, I wouldn't mind going back to thinner, lighter phones. That would be nice.
Sure. Let's go over to a very quick scene where Ellen goes to Pam's house to talk. Literally, she just goes to the door, says, "Can I come in?" And the scene ends. Then we go back to Mars, where the drilling begins. Danny is popping pills in the bathroom when he should be on mission. He returns to his post, where Nick leaves him to tend to the pressure control systems while he works on something else that's important. And there's an adjustment that Danny needs to make, but of course he's too out of it to notice, and the drill explodes, injuring people on site.
I wonder if we're going to get feedback where people think this is unrealistic, that like a trained NASA astronaut would, in a moment of crisis, flip off a comm switch rather than deal with the crisis he's creating. And I'm like, have you all seen Trainspotting?
What drugs make you do? Yeah.
Yeah, this is pill form heroin that he is taking on top of the meth that he is also taking. to even it all out.
Is he on speed? Is that what's happening here?
That's
he's been on speed so long that his body is just like trying to shut down, but the pills aren't letting it. And
I think it's both. Like he's taking uppers and downers, massive quantities to try to like, you know, find some kind of equilibrium. And it's just, it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah.
But, I also want to say this opening scene of the cosmonaut commander and the Helios commander, Ed, standing there was unintentionally funny because I still can't get over these Helios suits, man.
Mm-hmm.
When they have this heroic angle shot of the admittedly badass Soviet spacesuit, I think they've maybe kind of maybe cooler than the NASA ones because they're a little bit more minimalist, a little bit more form fitting. Up against this fat Mega Man thing that's crotch is hanging at about Ed's knees and it's at this heroic angle. So you see all the wrong things and all the wrong proportions. It's like, oh, how did this not pass the laugh test on the pre-production design? It's just, it just keeps getting funnier.
It's ironic too, because SpaceX's suits look so much cooler than NASA suits in real life. I would think like if the private space corporation were going to go into space, they would have put more budget into the suits.
But yeah, they'd Steve Jobs it, make it look slick and cool.
Yeah, because it's all about
2001-y
image, right?
Like, and yeah,
you want people excited about your corporations going to space.
Yeah, but there's when there's scenes of these people like waddling around trying to make it's really funny. It's really funny. Yeah. But I'm going to try to overlook at this because this is a major disaster and we shouldn't be laughing at the fat Mega Men and women running around the surface of Mars.
And as far as what they're saying, right? Like, I wonder what this valley will look like 10 years, 20 years, 100 years from now. I think it's cool because we're going to get to see it 10 years, 20 years from now, right? I wonder what this will look like next season.
It made me think of the scene in The Expanse in, early in season two where Draper is standing on that ridge after the mission she completed, the mock mission, and she's looking at Mariner Valley and she like flips her visor to see what it'll look like in 100 years and it's all going to be. It reminded me of like, and it's probably a lot of the same terrain because they're in that, you know, this is the Mariner Valley. I just thought it was super cool. I just wish Ed was not wearing a ridiculous blueberry outfit.
A couple more things. I want to talk about Danny here a little bit. Like Nick, I feel like Nick makes a mistake here, leaving him to tend alone to the mission after Ed has already taken him off one position because he's unstable and untrustworthy. Nick, you kind of fucked up here.
Do you think he's lying about having to do something, though? Like, I feel like
he's got stuff to do, but like, can it wait? You're at a critical juncture of this mission. I know he says like, oh, I got to do this for 30 minutes to have it ready by the time the drilling is complete. But like, I don't know. Ultimately, it's Ed's fault.
I was going to say, right? It's Ed's fuck up because if you got a job that needs two men to do it and they're both mission critical, it's like, it's too bad they're on Bluetooth headphones so he could like maintain the community, you know.
right. It's all wired
stuff.
It's just hilarious to me because like at this point, Danny is so out of it. He's basically playing Space Team with this communication stuff, like compressor speed to maximum, thrust muscle to go. It's like, he doesn't understand anything anybody's saying, and he doesn't understand the controls. And shit's like swinging, and there's goo oozing out of the panels for him.
I know we joked about Bruce Willis being right, but as I was listening to this dialogue, because Bruce Willis goes through a whole bunch of like mock things of what could happen when you're drilling on a commons. What happens if the bit bucks and the fluid compresses? And I wonder, it wouldn't surprise me if one of those is a verbatim quote from this episode. And I hope so. That would be hilarious. They did have like, people might wonder, the way that Mars works, if you expose liquid water to what is essentially the near vacuum of, I know Mars has an atmosphere, but it's tenuous. It's like 1/100th as thick as ours. Mm-hmm. It's effectively a vacuum. It would instantly begin to boil. Like, I don't know if your chemistry teacher, y'all ever put the glass of water in the bell jar and pulled a vacuum and it started boiling at room temperature. You didn't get, which one's
essentially
the same?
That's a pressure cooker principle, right?
Well, it's inverse. Pressure allows the water to get hotter and still, you know, whereas you're taking all the pressure off, so it just boils at room temperature.
Yeah, inverse.
The fear here is as soon as you got a natural pressure chamber, which is this deep rock reservoir. As soon as you expose that to the near vacuum of Mars, it's going to instantly flash to steam and come out of that at a super high pressure. I think they just accidentally fracked Mars.
Okay. Yeah. Seems like it.
Because it was just an uncontrollable, and they were pumping CO2 to kind of into the wellhead to kind of maximize the equalize those pressures. Mm-hmm. And they fracked Mars.
Why can't Ed just shut down the drill? This was the same thing on Armageddon. Speaking of Armageddon, they make a claim that they can't just shut down the drill. I don't know enough about drilling. I don't know anything about drilling to know why that's true.
That's why I need a roughneck out there.
Right?
Come to Papa
Bear. I
hope
we have one listening who could explain to me the principle behind we can't stop drilling.
It might be that like the closer, like there's a, it sounds like the other thing that happened is they were off by 30, 40 meters of how deep they thought the water was versus how. So mm-hmm. it's like one of those things where it's not about stopping. It's like if you only get a couple meters of rock between you and the pressure, it's just kind of like, yeah, rock is a tough material. It'll but if you've anyway. Got it, it's yeah, like it just got away from them, especially since Ed had no idea that they had a pill popper fucking blue screening in front of all the it shouldn't have got this far. It shouldn't have got to this point. There was no mechanical problems. There was no problems in the comms. It was all a human created disaster. And that human was Danny. So yeah. I don't know. I would love it. Yeah. If there's people out there with well drilling experience, I would love to hear some Bruce Willis type dialogue for this. But I felt like they did a pretty good job of telling everybody who wanted to know technical reasons why it happened. Yeah.
All right. And the malfunctioning drill causes a landslide that forces Danny and an injured Ed into the wrong hab, which is the one without a med bay, apparently, and probably kills at least one astronaut. Maybe more. Maybe everybody who's down there.
It seems like there was two people injured for sure. One of them appeared to be the Cuban cosmonaut. I thought it was a lady in a cosmonaut costume. Sorry, spacesuit
costume.
And, like they just picked it up at Planet Hollywood. That's
literally it's a costume, but yeah,
at the Halloween Planet Hollywood. What the hell is the costume place?
Spirit
there
Halloween.
There you go. They picked it up there. That's how strapped they are for cash. But it was Ed and I like the way that there's a little mystery of like, who's it going to be? And cause you just, when the comms come on, it's like two people injured and they're referring to one in the masculine. So, but it's Ed and another cosmonaut. Do you think the cosmonaut that got lost to the avalanche is going to die?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the one, the at least one that's dead.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't see how you survive that.
Well, there's that one also in the mobile hab. I never saw the MSAM. I never saw the MSAM take off again. Mm. So I'm pretty sure that got buried.
God help. They have more than one MSAM, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm certain they do. But I think the person who ran to the MSAM to try and like...
They might be going to...
I forget what they said that they were going to do in the MSAM. But yeah, they said, I'm going back to the MSAM. They're probably dead.
NASA's gonna have to bail everyone out again, aren't they?
Don't do it. Just go over there. Just send a drill up and go over there and start drilling. Let them deal with their own shit.
Mm.
I mean, Danielle would never do that. Obviously, she'd never leave someone behind.
No.
But
no.
She should.
But
this is why you need guns in space. Armageddon made a great argument for guns in space. Like they were appalled. You brought a gun to space. Yeah, you need it for summary executions of idiots like Danny.
Okay. I was like, I can't wait to hear how a good guy with a gun is going to stop the avalanche. But okay, yeah.
Summary executions of idiots. Yes.
You know what? Not usually for the death penalty, but if this ends the Danny plot line by any means necessary.
Also, why can't they land closer to the habs? They've got injured people in here. I get it, there's a landing zone, but they are.
Yeah.
Football fields away and from
like
halves.
you don't want that blowing dirt and kicking up things into, but like in emergency situation, I'm surprised that wasn't that was so far away myself.
Yeah, weird. Anyway, that's about all I got. That's where we leave it. We're in the middle of an avalanche. Danny and Ed are stranded together in a hab. He's bleeding profusely. It's not going to be fun.
It was a hell of a scene, man. I started writing, like, I had my notes like an earthquake exclamation mark, and I had to backspace, change it to Marsquake.
Oh yeah,
because it's that's what it is. But it just kept getting worse. Like, at first I thought that you see in the distance the well up there just exhausting all that precious water into steam, and it's just going in the atmosphere, is going to be completely lost. And I'm like, oh my god, what a fucking deal. And then the ground started rumbling. I'm like, oh god, the whole well's going to fracture. Then the cliff shattered. I'm like, oh fuck. I think we just found out why they had to dig on that ridge, though.
Because they needed a landslide?
They needed a landslide. Yeah.
No, it feels artificial, for sure. But who knows? Maybe maybe Bruce Willis will write in and let us know exactly everything he learned on Armageddon and tell us why they have to drill on the ridge.
Unfortunately, I think there was a Times article about Dementia that might keep him from writing in and letting us know about all that knowledge. But maybe Ben Affleck. He's the one that knows more than fucking Michael Bay, apparently.
Fichtner, is that the guy's name? He can write in. Steve Buscemi could write in.
Of course.
Will Patton could write in. Michael Clark Duncan could write in. Can I name all of the actors on
this? No, that guy's dead too. We've lost.
Michael Clark Duncan is dead?
Isn't he?
Oh shit, you might be right. That's sad. That Pork Rind's dead. Oh man.
Yeah, he died, man. Papa Bear passed away.
I love Armageddon.
2012. Oh my god, it's been 10 years ago. Yeah.
Wow. All right.
All our heroes are passing, man. We're getting old. They're going to be coming for Leia. They're going to get Luke and Han. Mm-hmm. They're going to get Picard. Kirk is already on borrowed time. What the hell? Yeah, it's going to be sad. It's going to be sad for us nerds.
He's going to be out there on his ranch for the next 100 years. I'll be dead before he is.
I'm not rooting for it, but I was going to say that'd be nice.
That's the podcast.
Yeah. I'm not stomping on any cyber dogs, but I will fantasize about the death of my co-host, because he's a cyber dog murdering psychopath. If you have feedback that does not revolve around Jim's cruelty to digital life,
or
send that into
my premature death.
Or the plotting that I'm doing against him. Send that to FAM, standing for All Mankind, at baldmove.com. And we will be considering that in a feedback episode very soon. We've got 3 more episodes to fix this situation on Mars, to fix this situation on Earth. I'm starting to think it's not going to be fixed. I'm starting to think they're going to have a whole other season about what spins off from here. FAM@baldmove.com. If you'd like to send us feedback, we'll be back next week when the new episode drops. I can't wait to see what you all think about it. And we will see you then. Until then, I'm Rose Dayron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.